One time, a long time ago, over in the old country, they lived this king, and he was a pretty good old king, real well-to-do. He had three or four closets full of silk robes that he wore, velvet knee breeches, buckles on his shoes, had rings for every finger, two crowns, one for every day and one for Sunday. And he lived in a big, fine castle, two floors with a moat, in the suburbs of London, over there in England. And he had all kinds of counselors and wizards and advisors and handmaidens and butlers. And one fella didn't do nothing but take care of the moat. And he had the prettiest daughter you ever laid your eyes on. She had this real clear skin, and he was happy. There was one bad thing about living where he did, though. There was this great big giant that lived in the woods near there, and he had this 60-foot dragon for a pet. Dragon breathed fire out of his mouth and smoke out of his nose, and they was both big and mean and ugly. Caused untold damage and destruction all over the countryside. And the king kept sending soldiers in there to kill that giant and dragon, and the giant and dragon kept killing the soldiers. And the king's army was getting smaller and smaller. And King got worried about that thing, you know, in case there was to come along a war. And none of his advisors, nor counselors, nor wizards could tell him what to do. They was stumped. They used to say that a whole lot. They'd say, "King, we're stumped." Even the head wizard couldn't do nothing. He'd say, "King, I'm sorry as I can be. You got some warts you want me to take off? I can take off your warts. But I can't do nothing about that giant and that dragon. I'm stumped." And so the king got on his royal golden carriage and went uptown, took his beautiful daughter with him, and he gathered all the people together there in the square, and he got up and he says, "Hark. Says, hark, behold, hear ye. Says, anybody that'll go in them woods and kill that giant and that dragon, I'll give them half of my cattle and half of my kingdom, and they can marry my beautiful daughter, the one with the clear skin." And there was a voice from the back that says, "Now you said something, King." And everybody turned around and saw the one that volunteered was a boy named Jack. See, he always had been stuck on that princess. He used to be in her class at Sunday school. And he walked right over and got right up in the carriage, sat right down by the princess, took a hold of her hand, looked her right in the eye, and says, "Hey, honey," says, "I'm gonna kiss you right on the mouth." And the king says, "Whoa," says, "Hold on," says, "Turn loose of that girl, take your hand off of her." Says, "We made a bargain about you killing that giant and that dragon and then courting my daughter. I didn't say nothing to you about courting her first." And Jack says, "Excuse me, she got to me." Next morning, Jack was sitting around on the front porch of the castle, fixing to go in the woods and fight that giant and that dragon. And he looked over there on the porch swing, and there sat the princess, with her veil pulled down, grinning at him. And he knowed he'd have to go through with it. He went way deep in the woods there, scared to death all the time. And he heard the awfulest racket you ever heard coming up the mountain. Stomping and a hollering, and the trees were shaking like a big wind was blowing them. And boulders falling off the mountains. And here come that great big giant. And Jack thought, "Mercy, I can't stand this, let me hide." And he saw this big, tall simmon tree, and he clumb up it, figuring he'd get up higher in the giant's head, and the giant wouldn't see him. "Don't you know that giant was coming up there to pick simmons?" And the giant saw Jack, and he says, "What are you doing in my simmon tree?" Says, "I believe I'll kill you right now." And Jack says, "Whoa," says, "Hold on there, High Pockets." Says, "I was just up here eating some simmons. I didn't know it was your simmon tree. Before you come over here talking about killing me, I feel I ought to tell you that I'm a elf." And the giant says, "You a what?" And Jack says, "What's the matter with you? Ain't you got no smart?" "I says, I'm a elf. The elf is a being that is indestructible. And the giant says, prove it. Says, do something indestructible to yourself. And Jack says, all right, I'll cut myself open and sew myself back up and go on like nothing happened. And the giant says, I don't believe it. Says, you're some kind of a nut. And Jack was wearing this little leather apron, flesh-colored, and he cut it right across his middle like he was cutting himself and sewed it back up and was laughing and singing all the time. And he says to the giant, can you do that? And the giant says, I ain't never tried. And as it happened, that was the last thing the giant ever said, 'cause when he cut himself open in the middle that way, why, naturally, he died. And Jack was feeling pretty good about getting that giant killed off. And he come down out of the tree, and he was fixing going back up to the castle and tell the king about it. And he was walking along, whistling. When he did hear the awfulest racket you ever heard, and the earth was a-trembling, and trees was a-shaking, and rocks was a-falling off the mountains, and the air was hot and filled with smoke, and Jack says, law, I forgot about the dragon. Says, let me run before I get scalded. And he commenced to running, but the dragon seen him and commenced to running after him. And Jack was running faster and faster and faster. Run up one mountain and down another, and across meadows, through valleys. And the dragon was a-gaining on him all the time. And finally Jack come to a great big creek, and it was too wide to jump and too deep to wade. And he jumped in and commenced to swimming, and the dragon jumped in and was a-swimming after him and still a-gaining on him. And Jack could feel his hot breath on the back of his neck, and he says, I'm done for. But when the dragon got in over his head, the water put his fire out, and he drowned it. And Jack went on back up to the king's castle and courted the king's daughter pretty good. Took her uptown, everywhere, to preaching. Finally married her, and they had a good, long, happy life together, laughing and giggling to the end of their days. And they tell me that you can go in them woods over there in England right today and hardly ever see a giant or a dragon.
La 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 la. Now once upon a time, down south of the Borderway, there lived a little family, Samba Mama and her little daughter, Little Red Rumber Hood. Ba, 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 ba. Now, Samba Mama had baked a delicious cake and given it to her daughter to take to her grandma across the way in the woods. So Little Red Rumber Hood was gaily off away singing, I have a cake, I have a cake for my grandma. But little did she realize as she's walking there through the woods, there hiding behind a tree was the villain, Tango Wolf. Tango Wolf sprung upon her and said, where are you going, little girl? She said, I'm going over to my grandma's house to bring her this delicious cake. La 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 la. But little did she realize that Tango Wolf was planning to get there before her. So taking a shortcut through the woods, Tango Wolf got to grandma's house and knocked upon the door. It was a very big door, and a voice from within said, who's there? There's only I, your little granddaughter, and I have a delicious cake for you. Come in, said the grandmother unsuspectingly. Tango Wolf walked over to the grandmother's bed, and before she realized, he sprung upon her and devoured her. Then changing into her clothes, he jumped into bed. They're waiting for Little Red Rumber Hood, who was gaily coming along singing, I have a cake, I have a cake for my grandma, and the knocking upon the door. Door, a voice from within said, who's there? There's only I, your little granddaughter, and I have a delicious cake for you. Come in, said Tango Wolf, disguised as the grandmother. Little Red Rum Hood, walking over to her grandmother's bed, noticed that she didn't look as she always did. She noticed her big white teeth. She said, Grandma, where did you get those big white teeth? Yeah, said Tango Wolf. They're my new 1970 plates. I just got them at the license bureau. And then she noticed all the hair on her grandmother's face. She said, Grandma, where did you get all that hair? She says, how you fix the blade? With that, Tango Wolf ripped off the disguise, started chasing the Red Rum around the room. She started yelling for help. Help, 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 Congo Woodsman!
Congo Woodsman heard a scream, and he came quickly. With one quick sweep of his axe, he destroyed the wolf. And then, taking out the grandma, who was very much alive inside the wolf's stomach, they all lived happily ever after. It could happen, you know.
Over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go.
What's that? Smells like a little girl. A little girl wearing a hooded cape. Yes, red dye number 40, but there's something else. A rosewood basket filled with muffins. Pardon me, unaccompanied little girl. I couldn't help but notice you, by yourself, traveling alone through this dark and scary forest. Alone.
Yeah?
Where are you headed with that delicious-smelling basket of goodies?
Little Red Riding Hood knew how crafty and dangerous wolves can be, so she came up with a very clever plan.
I'm headed to my grandma's house. It's down the path in that direction. But I can't stay and chat. My poor, sick, feeble, vulnerable grandmother is waiting for me right down the end of that path. That way. Yep.
How delicious of you. I mean, how dedicated of you. But might I recommend taking time to gather some wonderfully beautiful flowers for your grandma as you go? There are many flowers just slightly off the path.
Oh, so you think I should bear slightly off the path to gather flowers?
Yes. The delay will definitely be worth it.
Well, thank you. I'll be sure to bear that in mind.
Please do. I'm sure your grandmother will be very surprised.
Thank you so much for bearing with me as I bear this basket onto my grandmother's house and help her bear her sickness that she can barely bear.
What's funny?
Nothing. Off I go.
Yes. Now to cut through the woods and arrive at grandmother's house first. Sucker.
Sucker.
Oh, my. Bad directions. That's clever. But I wonder, whatever became of that wolf?
Hello, Granny. Wait, you're not Grandma. Oh, goodness. What big teeth you have.
I don't think we'll need to worry about him anymore. More muffins?
Please.
And Little Red Riding Hood happily enjoyed muffins with her grandmother, who got well soon after. All because Red Riding Hood was a smart and practical girl who knew that wolves were dangerous and can't be trusted. The moral? Always give wolves bad directions. Always. The end.
The story of Little Blue Riding Hood is true. Only the color has been changed to prevent an investigation.
This is the woods. My name is Wednesday. I work out of homicide. Monday, February the 2nd, 10:22 a.m. Bumped into Chicken Lickin', told me the sky was falling. I booked her on a 6:14, turned her over to the psychiatrist. Then a call came in at a 5:03. When I was on my way to the 503, a 618 came in. I added up the 614, the 503, and the 618. Got 1,735. I handed in my paper to the chief. He corrected it, gave me 100%, patted me on the head. Told me I was a good cop. 11:45 a.m. it happened. I saw a little girl in a blue hood carrying a basket. I stopped to question her. Pardon me, ma'am. Could I talk to you for just a minute, ma'am?
What about?
Nothing much, ma'am. Just want to ask you a few questions, ma'am. What's your name?
Little Blue Riding Hood.
Where are you going, ma'am?
Grandma's house.
Yes, ma'am. What do you got in the basket?
What are you trying to say? I got something in the basket I shouldn't have?
No, ma'am, I didn't say that.
Then why are you asking me all these questions for?
Just routine, ma'am. We just want to get the facts. May I have a look in that basket, ma'am?
Be my guest.
Let's see. Sawed-off shotgun. Knife. Bludgeon. Box of dum-dum shells. Nothing suspicious here. All right, ma'am, we may want to talk to you later, so don't leave the woods. She skipped on down the path, but she didn't know I'd seen the concealed compartment in the basket. In it, what I'd suspected all along. Goodies. My job, get to Grandma's before she did. I took a shortcut through the strawberry patch. It was sort of a strawberry shortcut. I walked up to the cottage, rang the bell.
Come in, dear.
Okay, Grandma, it's a raid.
A raid? Why, I'm just a peace-loving old lady. You've got the wrong Grandma.
Yes, ma'am. We just want to get the facts. Where'd you get that bump on your head?
The sky fell on me this morning.
I made a note to book her on the 614 and turned her over to the psychiatrist. I tied her up, put her in the closet, then I put on the grandma's suit and got into bed. Come in, ma'am.
Hello, Grandma. I got the loot. What are you doing in bed?
I'm feeling poorly.
But, Grandma, what big ears you have.
All the better to get the facts. I just want to get the facts, ma'am.
But, Grandma, what a big subpoena you have in your pocket.
All the better to serve you with.
But, Grandma, what a big 38 police special you have pointed at me.
All the better to take you in. You're under arrest. You and your grandma are operating a goodies ring.
A cop? I should have known.
Known what, ma'am?
You look nothing like my grandma. You forgot about the mustache.
But I don't have a mustache.
I know, but Grandma does.
Well, I see you broke the goodies ring. How'd you get a lead on her, Joe?
I just played a hunch, Frank. It was just a hunch. I played my luck. Sometimes a hunch pays off, sometimes it doesn't. I was just lucky. I just played a hunch, Frank.
What you're trying to say, Joe, is you just played a hunch. A lucky guess. Sometimes a hunch pays off, sometimes it doesn't. You just played a hunch. Is that what you're trying to tell me, Joe?
Yeah. I just played a hunch.
Once upon a time, there was an old woodcutter who lived in the woods.
I like to be near my work, you know what I mean?
And this old woodcutter had two children named Felicia and Bruno. One day, he told them that it was time for them to make their own way in the world.
It's time for you to make your own way in the world, kids.
We know.
But before you go, I want to give each of you a gift.
Wild.
For you, Bruno, a chicken.
Gee, Dad, it's a leghorn.
And for you, Felicia, a pot of pinks. They're small gifts, to be sure.
You can say that again.
But one of them is magic.
Which one?
I forgot. Well, have a nice trip, kids.
Bye, Dad.
Right if you get rich.
And the two children set out to make their way in the world.
What are you going to do with a pot of pinks, if that's what they are?
What are you going to do with a miserable chicken?
Obviously, you haven't made the fairy story scene. What I undoubtedly have here is a magic chicken that lays golden eggs. Stand back. She's going to lay one right now. There you see, a golden egg.
Doesn't look gold to me.
Yes, sir, a golden egg. Oh, it's the gracious life for me from now on.
Looks like a regular egg.
Jaguars, Brooks Brothers suits, winters in Jamaica.
Regular chicken egg.
There you'll be, sniffing your pot of pinks while I'm dining at 21, even 22. But that's fairy stories, yes, sirree. Whoops.
Yes, sirree, that's fairy stories.
I'll go snip your pinks. If that's what they are.
But when Felicia turned to sniff the pinks, she saw they were drooping.
Oh, dear.
So she took a pitcher down to the lake to get some water for them. But no sooner had she started to fill it than a tree by the side of the lake suddenly changed into a beautiful lady.
Wow! Do that again!
All righty.
That's sensational!
Well, that's fairy stories.
I wish my brother could see that. He's a nut for that kind of thing, you know, witches, magic, and like that.
Meanwhile, back at the chicken.
You're not magic. You're nothing but a stupid Plymouth Rock. You're no better than a crummy pot of pinks that... Hey, if you're not magic, it must be the pot of pinks that's magic. I should have known with a dizzy name like Pot of Pinks. No comments.
So Bruno stole the pot of pinks and substituted a cabbage in its place. A short time later, Felicia returned with the pitcher of water.
Wow, you really were thirsty, weren't you?
Felicia, I don't know how to tell you this, but that isn't a pot of pinks.
No?
No, it's a cabbage. Your brother has the real pot of pinks, if that's what they are.
Well, aren't you going to do something magic to get them back?
No, the only trick I can do is to change from a lady to a tree and vice versa.
Well, that's fairy stories.
But when Felicia set the cabbage down on the ground...
Ouch! Watch out there, it hurt there.
Who said that?
I did there.
That's all I need, a talking cabbage.
Such a bump you gave me there.
Well, I'm sorry, but being a cabbage, you got to expect a certain amount of rough treatment. I mean, I didn't make the rules.
But listen, I'm not an ordinary talking cabbage. I'm different there.
I know. You can turn yourself into a handsome prince.
Oh, anybody can do that. Frogs, donkeys. Now, what I do is unique. A whole new bit there.
So what's your bit?
I lay golden eggs.
Oh, ridiculous. If you expect me to stay around and listen to anything so far-fetched...
What'll you do?
I'll turn back into a tree.
And she did.
But I'm not kidding. I feel a golden egg coming on now. Oh, cluck, cluck. Cluck, cluck there.
Well, the cabbage began to hop around strangely. And would you believe it, actually laid a golden egg.
Wow! Would you do that again?
No.
Why not? I think that's wonderful.
Well, to tell you the truth, it's the first time I ever did it. And I don't like it a bit there.
Oh.
But I will tell you how to get your pot of pinks back, if that's what they are.
How?
Just take that golden egg and jump.
Meanwhile, Bruno was trying to coax magic out of Felicia's pinks.
Come on, pinks, if that's what you are. Just one little trick.
Bruno, those are my pinks.
We traded. Take your chicken and get out of here.
Do I take the golden egg, too?
Sure, take the golden egg.
Yeah, see?
Here's your pot of pinks. Give me my chicken.
I thought we traded.
We didn't shake hands on it.
So Felicia took back her pot of pinks and watered it tenderly. And as she did, a strange thing happened. The pot of pinks turned into a handsome prince.
Kind maiden, will you marry me?
Oh, your highness.
Just call me Pinky.
So Felicia and the prince were wed, and Bruno, well, he was so insistent that the chicken really did start laying golden eggs.
Anything to stop him from bugging me.
So they all lived happily ever after, which just goes to show the power of positive thinking.
Oh, as we call it, the power of positive thinking.
Well, that's fairy stories.
You heard about Humpty Dumpty, big old chicken egg. He wore that red fedora hat and that tiny arm and leg. When he left the carton, his mama, she did cluck. Say, you may be an egghead boy, but just don't test your luck. Don't you hope too high, don't you jump no jump, don't you climb no ladder to the upper bunk. Yo, a fragile egg, not a hard boy punk. You're gonna take a tumble into Humpty Chunks. He met this bright blue robin egg, he was smitten from the start. Cause one thing about robin, robin gonna steal your heart. She said, you're not some yokel, you're more than that inside. So step up on that garden wall and see the countryside. Don't you hope too high, don't you jump no jump, climb no ladder to the upper bunk. You're a fragile leg, not a hardball punk. You're gonna take a tumble into Humpty Chunks. He stepped up on the garden wall, but slipped and tumbled back. He felt his soul arising when he heard a mighty crack. Somewhere in the silence, in the place there was no pain, he heard his mother clucking out that cautionary refrain. Don't you hope too high, don't you jump no jump, don't you climb no ladder to the upper bunk. You're a fragile egg, not a hardboiled punk. You're gonna take a tumble into Humpty Chunks. Well, all of the king's horses and the king's EMS scrambled for the skill it took to clean up Humpty's mess. But all they found was eggshell on the spot where Humpty crashed, and a baby rooster strutting round in a red fedora hat. Don't you hope too high, don't you jump no jump, don't you climb no ladder to the upper bunk. You're a fragile egg, not a hardball punk. You're gonna take a tumble into Humpty Chunks. Humpty Chunks. A baby rooster by the name of Humpty Chunks.
Thank you.
Humpty Chunks.
Adapted from the story by Jacob and Wilhelm Grimm. Once upon a time, there was a kind, wealthy, and altogether lovely couple. The wife desired children, but pray as she may, none came. One day, as she was praying in the courtyard, peeling an apple, she cut her finger and blood trickled onto the snow. Seeing the blood on the snow, a vision of a boy came to her. One with skin like the snow and blood as red as hers. The winter passed and the wife began to doubt that she would ever give birth. 8 months passed and she told her husband that if she were to die, to bury her beneath the juniper tree, for that is where she had the vision of her child. But when the spring came, the woman gave birth to a boy, just like the one she had seen in her vision. The wife became so full of joy that she died from the shock, and her husband, overcome with sorrow, buried her underneath the juniper tree. The husband remarries and his second wife gives birth to a girl, Marlene. At first, his second wife seems kind, but as the years pass, she becomes wicked. When the second wife realizes that the son of her husband would be the inheritor of her husband's wealth, well, she becomes jealous and begins to hate the boy. She yells at him like a servant and slaps him around constantly. One day, she gave her daughter Marlene an apple. Marlene thanked her and smiled, and seeing that her stepbrother was hungry, she asked if he were not to have one as well. "Of course," she said to her daughter, and she invited the boy to pick an apple from her chest. As the boy was looking over the apples, leaning into the chest, the second wife had a cruel thought and slammed the lid of the chest on the boy, decapitating him. The second wife panicked and bandaged the boy's head back onto his body. Marlene saw the boy standing still and asked him if he enjoyed his apple. When he did not answer, she hit him on the head, which caused his head to fall off. The girl panicked and told her mother what had happened, in between sobs and tears. Her mother scolded her, but said that they mustn't tell father. The second wife then proceeded to cook the boy into a stew to hide his disappearance. The stew did not need any salt, for Marlene cried so much. When the father came home and they sat down to dinner, his wife said that the boy was out with his uncle. His father was upset but not overly worried, as he sat and enjoyed the stew. Marlene, still distraught, took the bones of the boy and buried them underneath the juniper tree. As she laid them there, her grief and sorrow disappeared. As the girl went back into her house, the juniper tree began to shake and move, and a bird flew away from the tree, and finding a goldsmith, the bird began to sing. The goldsmith told the bird that its song was beautiful, and that he would like to hear more. The bird said that he would sing if the man traded his gold chain. The bird sings its song of sorrow again to a shoemaker, and trades his song for shoes, and then again to a miller, who trades the song for a millstone. The bird then flies away back to the house of the rich man, his wife, and Marlene. The three are eating dinner when they hear a bird singing outside. The wife feels terrified suddenly and stays away while the father and Marlene go to see the beautiful bird and listen to its song. The father looks up, and as he does so, a gold chain falls around his neck. Marlene looks up, and as she does, some beautiful shoes fall to her feet. The wife sees this and begins to wonder, "What does that bird have for me?" And so she runs outside, looks up to the sky, and as she does, a millstone falls from the sky and kills her. The husband and Marlene look over to where his second wife was, but see only smoke and fire and no body. Realizing that she was a terrible person, the two begin to dance underneath the juniper tree, and they live happily ever after.
Listen, my children, and you will hear.
He fell asleep in the wood one day, saying, "What shame's left I
wear."
Say, say, say. The nagging wife kept all of his coin, none of his friends he ever joined.
Now we go, and now we go, da 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 da.
Bum bum, ba bum ba bum 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 bum.
Jack and Jill went up there.
Gather around, gather around. Come on, come on, little Jimmy. Here we go. Now, once upon a time, long time ago, there was this guy, all right, this guy who got it into his head that he had to gather all of the shiny chestnuts out there in the musical world. So he set upon it busily, very busily, until it got to be too much, and he realized he had to spew it out into the world. Thus, KBC Radio was born, and now the Bit Slap. Okay, the end. It's not the end, just the beginning, or the middle sometime. How about that? All right, so tonight we have a show about and containing many of your favorite fairy tales, starting with Andy Griffith, story of Jack the Giant Killer. I know that was a pretty thrilling thing. Little Red Rumba Hood was Sam Molano, Mr. Rhythm himself. The Fixed Fairy Tales, that was Little Red Riding Hood, how it should have ended. Stan Freeberg and his group, Little Blue Riding Hood, you remember that one, right? Of course. We heard, of course, Fractured Fairy Tales from Rocky and Bullwinkle, narrated by Edward Everett Horton, right? And with the same voice crew as Stan Freeberg, and that was Felicia and the Pot of Pinks. Humpty Dumpty was Haywood Banks first, and then the Rotten Eggs second. Got it? Okay. Grimm's Fairy Tale, The Juniper Tree. Grimm's Fairy Tales were grim, that's all I can tell you. I did some research on them this time around. Maybe we'll have a whole Grimm's Brothers show, but it would have to be during the daytime, okay? The Devotions, Rip Van Winkle, The Jack and Jill Shuffle from Theo Beckford, whoever he was, sank like a stone, I guess. And then Nat King Cole and his trio from 1938, Newtney in the Nursery, okay? So, yeah, we got a whole bunch of stories, Katie's. Gather around. We got some very, very, very unlikely ones, including this one here. See if you can believe this one.
When corporations fail, you pay for it. But when they succeed, it's theirs. They socialize their losses and privatize their gains. Why do we allow that?
Consider this. Wealthy people do not stash their billions in safe deposit boxes loaded with $100 bills. They don't do that. And they don't spend it all at the mall. They don't spend like crazy. No. Wealthy people invest. It is investment that creates jobs and economic growth.
See, this is the lie they tell you. That all this money flowing towards corporate moneyed interests is actually for your benefit. The government intervention for corporations is our free market. But government intervention for workers is socialism. And that's the reason for the socialism scaremongering. It's a false choice. To make you believe that this country has but two options. A socialist, authoritarian, hamburgerless Venezuelan nightmare. Or accept the status quo, where large corporations benefit from government help, then use some of those profits to lobby the same government for more government help. They want you to believe that in a free market, while your wages stay low, someday the largesse will eventually trickle down. And in the meantime, enjoy watching your tax dollars help billionaires launch themselves into fucking space.
Shadows lie. Sits the Dark Lord on his throne with ever watchful eye. He searches for the one ring that he lost long ago. And if he finds the one ring,
you must destroy the evil.
valley you travel, cauldron she loved dog hole. But the power of the ring is growing, and it strives to possess your soul. So climb quickly the mountain, you must reach the cracks of doom. Cast in the ring quickly, you cannot destroy it too soon.
Frog went a-courtin' and he did ride. King Kong, kitchy-kitchy-ki-me-yo, with a sword and a pistol by his side. King Kong, kitchy-kitchy-ki-me-yo, ki-mo-ki-mo-ki-mo-ki, way down yonder in a holler tree, an owl and a bat and a bumblebee. King Kong, kitchy-kitchy-ki-me-yo. He rode till he came to Miss Mouse's door. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. And there he knelt up on the floor. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. Ki-mo-ki-mo, ki-mo-ki, way down yonder in a holler tree, an owl and a bat and a bumblebee. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. He took Miss Mouse up on his knee. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. And he said, little mouse, will you marry me? King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. Ki-mo-ki-mo, ki-mo-ki, way down yonder in a holler tree, an owl and a bat and a bumblebee. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. Miss Mouse had suitors three or four. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. And there they came right in the door. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. Ki-mo-ki-mo, ki-mo-ki, way down yonder in a holler tree, an owl and a bat and a bumblebee. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. They grabbed Mr. Frog and began to fight. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. In that holler tree, t'was a terrible night. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. Ki-mo-ki-mo, ki-mo-ki, way down yonder in a holler tree, an owl and a bat and a bumblebee. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. Mr. Frog hurled the suitors to the floor. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. With his sword and his pistol, he killed all four. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. Ki-mo-ki-mo, ki-mo-ki, way down yonder in a holler tree, an owl and a bat and a bumblebee. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. They went to the parson the very next day. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. And left on their honeymoon right away. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. Ki-mo-ki-mo, ki-mo-ki, way down yonder in a holler tree, an owl and a bat and a bumblebee. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. Now they live far off in a holler tree. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. When they now have wealth and children free. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo. Ki-mo-ki-mo, ki-mo-ki, way down yonder in a holler tree, an owl and a bat and a bumblebee. King Kong, kitchy, kitchy, ki-me-yo.
Froggy went a-coatin' and he did right on. Froggy went a-coatin' and he did right oh. Froggy went a-coatin' and he did right, sword and a pistol by his side on. Well, he
winner up to Miss Mouse's door, and a hole in the hay, and a hole in the hay. Went up to Miss Mouse's door. Went up to Miss Mouse's door. She said, get away, you've been here before. Teeny Tymo in the land of fear of Pharaoh. Come a rat trap, penny winkle, Tommy doodle rattle, but a rat trap, penny, won't you kai me, oh. Took a Miss Mouse on his knee, Took a Miss Mousy on his knee, oh. Took a Miss Mousy on his knee. Well, he said, Miss Mousy, will you marry me, A little piece of cornbread lying on the shelf, and a hole in the hay, and a hole in the hay. Little piece of cornbread lying on the shelf, Little piece of cornbread lying on the shelf. You want any more, you can sing it yourself, Teeny Tymo in the land of fear of Pharaoh. Come a rat trap, penny winkle, Tommy doodle rattle, bugger rat trap, penny, won't you kime me, Kimbo, Kimbo, hero, zero, hey. Come a rat trap, folly winkle, lolly, bubble rat trap, penny. Won't you kind be old?
Once upon a time, there were three bears. A papa bear, and a mama bear, and a baby bear. They lived in the house. The mama bear had made some porridge, but it was much too hot. They decided to take a walk through the park. While away from the house, along came Goldilocks. She noticed no one home, so in the house she went. And there she saw three chairs. The papa's chair was much too hot, and mama's chair was much too soft, and the baby's chair was just right, but she broke it all to pieces. Then she noticed the porridge. The papa's porridge was much too hot, mama's porridge was much too cold, the baby's porridge was just right, and she ate it all up. Then she noticed the stairs up to the bedroom. There she saw three beds. The papa's bed was much too hot, the mama's bed was much too soft, the baby's bed was just right, and she fell asleep. Along came the three bears. The papa bear said somebody was in our house. Mama bear said somebody was in our house. The baby bear said somebody was in our house. I wonder who it can be. The papa's bear said somebody sat in my chair. The mama bear said somebody sat in my chair. And the baby bear said somebody sat in my chair and broke it all to pieces. Then they noticed the porridge was eaten. The papa's porridge was much too hot. The mama's porridge was much too cold. The baby porridge was just right, but it was all eaten up. Then they noticed footsteps. Up the stairs they went, and there they saw the bedroom door was open. In they went. Papa Bear said, somebody messed up my bed. Mama Bear said, somebody messed up my bed. The baby bear said, somebody messed up my bed. And there she is, Goldilocks. Waking her up with the start, away she ran, out the window, away from the bears, running, 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 away. The bears came back home and closed their doors. And they lived ever happily ever after. And that is the story of the three little bears.
Hello, kiddies. This is your Uncle Steve with another bedtime story. Once upon a time in the land of Whoop-Bop Shabam, there lived a little girl named Goldilocks. One day, Goldilocks' mother said, "Honey, you can sit the next set out in the backyard if you promise not to goof off and get lost." "Mommy-o," said Goldie, heading for the yard. "This is the place." "Crazy," said her mother, returning to her household chores. Well, for a while, little Goldilocks was content to play in the backyard. But finally, she became bored and decided to see a bit of the world. Wandering out through the back gate, she soon found herself in a deep, dark forest. In no time, she was hopelessly lost, and her terror mounted as she perceived that it was getting quite dark. Suddenly, in the distance, Goldilocks saw a light flickering in the darkness, and with hopes high, she ran toward it. The light, she soon learned, came from a strange little house in the middle of the forest, a house she had never seen before. Fearfully, she knocked on the door. And getting no answer from the bartender, she entered. Inside the house, she saw three chairs. "Bless my soul," said Goldie. "The three sons must be working this spot." She next spied three steaming bowls of soup on a table. "This joint must have been raided," she said. "Looks like everybody cut out." Sampling the soup, she learned that the largest bowl was very hot, the next bowl was very cool, and the littlest bowl was just right. Naturally, she chose the cool bowl. Feeling a bit weary, she then walked upstairs and found a bedroom with three beds in it. "Oh, these dressing rooms on the road," Goldie said to herself, "are the lowest." Then, drowsy, she tried all three beds and finally lay down upon the smallest and fell fast asleep. Shortly thereafter, the downstairs door banged open and in walked three bears. "I smell our pay," said the mama bear to her mate. "Gus, you've had a dame here." "You're out of your skull," said the papa bear. "Although it does look as if somebody had eyes for the soup over there." "I'm hip," said the mama bear. "And dig, the upstairs bedroom door is open." "Hey, Weirdsville," said the baby bear. "This whole thing is real nervous." "Let's fall upstairs," said the papa bear, "and find out what the bit is." So saying, the three bears climbed the stairs and walked into the bedroom where Goldilocks lay sound asleep. "Hey," said the papa bear, "somebody's been making it in my bed." "There's been a scuffle in my pad, too," said the mama bear. "I don't like to start idle gossip," said the baby bear, "but if you'll take it from the top, you'll dig that there's a chick in my sack right now." "So there is," said the papa bear, shaking Goldilocks gently. "Baby, wake up. You better check with the desk clerk." Goldilocks rolled over and mumbled sleepily, "Jack, don't bug me. I'm beat." "Nutty," said the papa bear, "but you better call GAC. They booked you into the wrong room." "Oh, I'm sorry," said Goldilocks, perceiving her error at last. "Forgive me for coming on so square." And so the three bears took her downstairs and showed her the way to go home. And little Goldilocks never again disobeyed her mother. Sometimes, though, in the spring, she looks through the latest downbeat to see where the trios are playing, you know?
Time ago, there was a little kingdom which perched on the top of a high mountain. The king of this little kingdom was constantly trying to find new ways to raise money to buy the things he thought the country needed, like, a new robe for the king, for instance.
"How much is it?"
500 pesos, your majesty.
Well, I'll have to levy another tax on the little people."
"But we already have a tax on everything, majesty. What can you tax them for?"
"Easy. I'll just tax them for being little people."
"Hear ye, all people under 4'6" will be taxed accordingly."
"Well, there weren't very many people that little. Matter of fact, only one family in the kingdom was under 4'6", the goblins, and they didn't like it a bit."
"Maybe we don't have height, but we've got heart."
"If you're gonna live on this mountain, you gotta pay the tax."
"Then we won't live on the mountain. We'll live in the mountain. Come on, all you goblins."
And the whole goblin family entered a hole in the side of the mountain and shut the door.
And you better be careful from now on, or the goblins will get you if you don't watch out.
But, as we said, that was a long, long time ago. Since then, many kings had come and gone, tall, short, and medium. But the goblins still lived inside of the mountain, from where they would sally forth on moonlight nights to try to get people.
Hey, Sam.
Huh?
What do we do with the people when we get them?
Don't ask me. We never got one yet.
But sneaky though they were, the goblins had two weaknesses. First, they had very, very tender feet.
Oh, Sam, Sam, on my foot. My foot, take it off. It's killing me.
What's on it?
A feather.
Oh, I bet that hurt.
The goblin's second weakness was poetry.
Yeah, we hate it.
And that's one of the reasons they never got anybody. For all a person had to do was to say,
1, 2, buckle my shoe. 3, 4, shut the door.
Oh, don't,
and the goblins were stopped cold. Now, one day, the king decided to tell his daughter, Irene, the facts of life.
And remember, the goblins will get you if you don't watch out.
Have you ever seen a goblin?
No, but...
Well, how do you know there are such things? Is that a goblin?
Of course not.
Is that a goblin?
No.
Is that a goblin?
Why, yes, I believe it is.
It is! A goblin! A goblin!
And the princess ran for her life with a goblin close behind her.
I told you they'd get you!
But I don't want to be got! Help! Help!
The king summoned his knights, but their swords made no impression on the goblins at all. Things looked bad for the princess. Across a young miner named Curdy. And he was so struck by the prince's beauty that he was moved to poetry.
Oh, princess fair, your golden hair upon your head, I see it there.
And, of course, that stopped the goblin in his tracks, for he just couldn't stand poetry.
You saved me with your poem. Are you a handsome prince in disguise?
No, I'm just a handsome miner boy. Brave, courageous.
Couldn't you go somewhere and learn to be a prince?
Like where?
How about Princeton?
Isn't that awful?
Little did the princess know that the goblin who had chased her was the prince of goblins himself, that he was determined to make her his bride.
Are we almost there?
This is his spot, Gov.
Unfortunately, the goblins, they had chosen to come up in the middle of the royal croquet court.
4!
Not the right spot, huh?
A little more this way, I think. Yeah, there she is. Grab her.
But the goblins had guessed wrong again and got Curdy instead.
You fellows are making a terrible mistake. I'm Curdy.
You sure are, hon.
Well, I'll just recite a rhyme and,
But without the princess to inspire him, Curdy couldn't think of a thing. And in just no time, Curdy found himself in a very embarrassing position.
Do you take this earth ring for your wife?
She sure looks different. Could I take it out in the daylight and look at it?
And so the goblins came out of the mountain with Curdy still closely guarded. But who should he see just outside the hole but the princess herself? Again inspired, Curdy burst into verse.
What a gladsome fine surprise now to see you with my eyes. I love you more, my lovely princess, than pies of apples or of minces.
Well, the guards just couldn't stand that, and I really can't blame them.
Stamp on their toes! Stamp on their toes!
And the goblins fled back into the mountain forever.
See? I told you the goblins will get you if you don't watch out.
But you were wrong.
I was?
Sure. It's the love bug that gets you if you don't watch out.
Princess by my side. The Duke and the Duchess was a bit to meet me with a smile. Alice was staring wonderland, staring far away. The tree blind mice was there with me to tell the teddy bear the tale. The teddy bear came smiling there with a big smile. The little Bo Peep has lost her sheep last night. Dreamed last night about Alibaba with her 40 thieves. Tom, Tom, about her son, he was there with me. I rode through the valley with a princess by my side. The Duke and the Duchess did a reggae, reggae, reggae last night. Was about Alibaba with the 40 thieves. Tom, Tom, the piper's son, he was there with me. I rode through the valley with the princess by my side. I did the reggae, reggae last night with the princess, my bride. The Duke and the Duchess was there with me to meet me with a smile. Alice was there in a wonderland, staring far away. I did the reggae, 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 reggae last night. Ooh, yeah, yeah. Do the reggae, 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 reggae last night.
There was once a shoemaker who worked very hard and was very honest. But still, he could not earn enough to live upon. And at last, all he had in the world was gone, save just leather enough to make one pair of shoes. Then he cut his leather out, all ready to make up the next day, meaning to rise early in the morning to his work. His conscience was clear, and his heart light amidst all his troubles. So he went peaceably to bed, left all his cares to heaven, and soon fell asleep. In the morning after, he said his prayers. He sat himself down by his work, when, to his great wonder, there stood the shoes already made upon the table. The good man knew not what to say or think at such an odd thing happening. He looked at the workmanship. There was not one false stitch in the whole job. All was so neat and true that it was quite a masterpiece. The same day, a customer came in, and the shoes suited him so well that he willingly paid a price higher than usual for them, and the poor shoemaker, with the money, bought leather enough to make two pairs more. In the evening, he cut up the work and went to bed early, that he might get up and begin betimes next day. But he was saved all the trouble, for when he got up in the morning, the work was done, ready to his hand. Soon came in buyers, who paid him handsomely for his goods, so that he bought leather enough for four pair more. He cut out the work again overnight, and found it done in the morning as before, and so it went on for some time. What was got ready in the evening was always done by daybreak, and the good man soon became thriving and well off again. One evening, about Christmas time, as he and his wife were sitting over the fire, chatting together, he said to her, "I should like to sit up and watch tonight, that we may see who it is that comes and does my work for me." The wife liked the thought, so they left the light burning and hid themselves in the corner of the room, behind a curtain that was hung up there, and watched what would happen. As soon as it was midnight, there came in two little naked dwarves, and they sat themselves upon the shoemaker's bench, took up all the work that was cut out, and began to ply with their little fingers, stitching and wrapping and tapping away at such a rate that the shoemaker was all wonder, and could not take his eyes off of them. On they went, till the job was quite done, and the shoes stood ready for use upon the table. This was long before daybreak, and then they bustled away quick as lightning. The next day, the wife said to the shoemaker, These little whites have made us rich, and we ought to be thankful to them, and do them a little good turn if we can. I am quite sorry to see them run about as they do, and indeed it is not very decent, for they have nothing upon their backs to keep off the cold. I'll tell you what, I will make each of them a shirt, and a coat, and a waistcoat, and a pair of pantaloons in the bargain. And do you make each of them a little pair of shoes? The thought pleased the good cobbler very much, and one evening, when all the things were ready, they laid them on the table, instead of the work that they used to cut out, and then went and hid themselves to watch what the little elves would do. About midnight, in they came, dancing and skipping, hopped around the room. Then they went to sit down to their work as usual. But when they saw the clothes lying for them, they laughed and chuckled, and seemed mightily delighted. Then they dressed themselves in the twinkling of an eye, and danced and capered and sprang about as merry as they could be, till at last they danced out the door and away over the green. The good couple saw them no more, but everything went well with them from that time forward as long as they lived.
Jackson had a girl he fondly called Bo Peep. Now Jackson didn't have a car, so drove by in a Jeep. They took a ride, the time flew by, and Jackson was in heaven. Till Jackson cried, Bo Peep, my Jeep's gotta be in camp by 11. So little Bo Peep has lost her Jeep and don't know where to find it. Her soldier boy took it back to camp and left Bo Peep behind it. It didn't have doors, the seats were hard, but Bo Peep never minded. It didn't ride like a Cadillac, she wondered who designed it. Roller coasters nearly killed her, aeroplanes, they never thrilled her. But with Jackson at the wheel, she got that Jeep, Jeep, Jeep and feel. Now little Bo Peep wants to find her Jeep and find her soldier Chappie. If he comes chug chuggy in his old Blitz buggy, Bo Peep will be happy. Little Bo Peep has lost her Jeep, her boyfriend made an error. He let her drive, goodness sakes alive, that Bo Peep, she's a terror. With throttle pushed down, she tore through town, the red lights didn't stop her. The soldier knew that they both were through when she sideswiped the copper. Now little Bo Peep, she's lost her Jeep. Oh my, why must her joy end? Now her little Jeep is laying in a heap, and the guardhouse has her boyfriend.
There once was a beautiful girl who was known to swipe left all day, until she found a charming prince who was only a mile away. The prince was none too picky, but this one was out of his league. He'd never seen a maiden so fair, plus he hadn't had sex in a week. And so their courtship did blossom. They planned to meet up that night. She donned her prettiest dress and a pair of control top tights.
Tinderelli, Tinderelli, show some cleavage, Tinderelli.
The ball was full of creepers. They scoped her low and high. She couldn't find her handsome prince because her battery just died. The prince was so distraught. Alas and alack. Of all the girls he'd messaged, she was the hottest who wrote back. So he took out her selfie, and he searched far and wide, from the girls doing shots to the ones smoking outside. The prince felt defeated, and also pretty drunk. But then, out of nowhere, he saw his one true love. She snuck out that morning at 4:30 a.m., and they lived happily ever after, because they never
spoke again.
Princess and the Pea is an interesting story. The overly picky prince, determined to find a true princess, and the pea in the bed... never mind. Anyway, odd tale indeed. Let's look at how this story should have ended, shall we?
Oh, Mother, I fear I shall never find a true princess that is truly true. And now it is beginning to rain. Woe is me.
Don't despair, my darling dear. You deserve a princess. As true as can be.
And while the picky prince was at his whiniest, and the storm had reached its stormiest, there came a knock at the castle's front door. The prince opened the door to find the soggiest, muddiest, least princessiest-looking young woman he had ever seen.
Hello.
Yes?
I got separated from my traveling companions during this terrible storm. May I please come in out of the rain?
I'm sorry, but we're only allowing entrance to true princesses. Good day.
But the woman at the door would not give up. She knocked even louder this time.
Yes?
I am a true princess. Please, let me come in out of the rain.
The prince was confused. Could this soggy, muddy, now grumpy young woman truly be a true princess?
Of course you can come in, Muddy. I mean, my dear.
Oh, thank you. I'm so tired, drenched, and hungry. I've barely slept at all on this trip. What I really need is shelter for the night.
But Mother, she's...
Of course, of course. Why don't you get something to eat and warm up by the fire as we prepare a nice room for you to sleep in tonight?
Thank you so much.
But, Mother, why would you...
Don't worry, darling. I have the perfect way to test if she's a true princess or not.
So while the soggy princess dried out, the queen directed her servants to prepare a bed with 20 mattresses.
More?
More!
Then she added 20 soft down comforters.
More?
More!
Then the queen took a single tiny green pea and placed it under the massive pile of comforters and mattresses.
More?
No. A true princess is sensitive. So if she feels that tiny pea under all of that, then we will know she is a true princess.
Why don't we just call the kingdom she says she's from and ask them if she's a princess?
This is the only way!
The next morning at breakfast, the prince and the queen anxiously awaited the arrival of the princess. Finally, she dragged herself down the stairs with what the prince thought were very promising bags under her red, swollen eyes.
Good morning, my dear.
How did you sleep last night?
Sadly, I didn't sleep well at all. Thank you for the room, but there was some sort of rock or lump in those mattresses. And no matter how I tossed or turned, I couldn't get comfortable. I never actually fell asleep.
Hooray! You passed the test!
What?
That was all a test! Only a true princess would be sensitive enough to know the pee was there. You passed! And now we know you are a true princess.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I showed up on your doorstep drenched, filthy, and exhausted. And you decided to test me?
Yes, it was all a test. But you passed, so hooray!
And now you two can get married!
Yes!
Hooray!
Married!
No! We're not getting married! What is wrong with you people? That's the meanest thing anyone has ever done to me! Why would I want to marry someone who treats women that way?
Because I'm a prince.
What was it you said to me last night? Oh, right, I remember. Good day!
But wait! You're the only true princess in the land!
Yeah, but you're not the only prince! I'm off to find someone nicer!
And she did find someone nicer. A kind prince who respected her and didn't try to put her through silly, stupid tests. They lived happily ever after and never ate peas.
So, the moral of the story? Always be nice to people. And don't hide your vegetables under the bed. The end!
Okay, that should do it for now. Remember that one? Yeah, Princess and the Pea. God bless it. Anyway, good evening. How are you? We're still here, but we're leaving now. Started up the last set there, the second set, the what you just heard set there, the set you just heard. Okay, you got it? You know what I mean? Yeah. All right. Started with Jon Stewart. That was Jon Stewart. A brief but accurate description of the fairy tale of trickle-down economics. All right. Lord of the Rings was the downliner sect from England in the 60s. They were around in the 60s. That was a pretty quick encapsulation of it, but what are you going to do, right? King Kong Kichi Kichi Kaimyo was Chubby Parker and his old-time banjo, the Froggy Winnicorton, and then another version of Froggy Winnicorton from Tex Ritter. Sam Milano again, the Three Bears from 1954. I wish there was more stuff with him. Mostly it's like, Anyway, Goldilocks and the Three Bears was from Steve Allen in 1953. Another Fractured Fairy Tale from Rocky and Bullwinkle, that was The Princess and the Goblin. John Holt and Ali Baba, kind of an overview there. And then, The Elves and the Shoemaker. That was also a grim fairy tale, but not particularly grim. Okay. Little Bo Peep has lost her sheep with Spike Jones. Tinderella, a modern type of love story, fairy tale type thing from College Humor. The Walrus and the Carpenter, ripped out of Alice in Wonderland. That was Sean Strain and the Dews. I'll repeat that. Sean Strain and the Dews. No, I never did either, but there they were. Trying to sound like the Beatles. There was a connection there somehow. I don't know what it meant. And then, of course, Fixed Fairy Tales. We fixed that one, but good. That was The Princess and the Pea. Okay? So, that leaves us here kind of awkwardly saying goodnight again. I got some more for you. Basically, one long thing here for you. We talked about the Grimm's Fairy Tales. This guy has more to say about it. And like I say, if I do this again, I'll try to do it during the daytime. Meantime, you have a good week, and I will see you later.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
Here are 25 dark and disturbing original versions of children's fairy tales. 25. Giambattista Basile's version of Sleeping Beauty is really dark. The Sleeping Beauty is raped by a passing king and gives birth to two children, while she is still asleep. 24. In Carlo Collodi's original Pinocchio, once Geppetto carves him, the marionette runs away. He's caught by the police, who assume Geppetto's abused him, and they imprison the puppet maker. Pinocchio goes back to Geppetto's house that night and accidentally kills the wise-talking cricket. He later gets hung from a tree and suffocates. 23. Peter and Wendy by J.M. Barrie has more adult themes than you'd guess. Peter Pan brings Wendy to Neverland to act as a mother to the Lost Boys. In time, Wendy starts to fall in love with Peter and asks him how he feels for her. He describes himself as her faithful son. Now, that's the strangest friend-zoning I've ever heard. 22. Some versions of the English tale, The Three Little Pigs, have the wolf eating the first and second piggies after he blows down their weak straw and stick houses. 21. In the original tale of The Little Mermaid by Hans Christian Andersen, the mermaid's footsteps are agony to her, akin to walking on sharp swords, but she dances for the prince anyway. When he falls for another, instead of killing him to save herself, she dies and dissolves into sea foam. 20. In Aladdin, he is trapped in the magic cave when he rubs a ring he is wearing, and a lesser genie takes him back to his mother. His mother cleans a lamp that reveals a more powerful genie who gives Aladdin his wealth and a palace. A sorcerer tricks Aladdin's new wife, gets the lamp, and has the genie transport the palace to his home. Aladdin uses the ring genie to transport there, kill the sorcerer, and bring his palace back to where it was. 19. The real version of the Ugly Duckling has the little duckling originally harassed incessantly by the other barnyard animals. He escapes and lives with wild geese and ducks who are soon slaughtered by hunters. An old woman takes him in, but her cat and hen harass him even more, so he leaves again. After much abuse and spending winter alone, he joins the swans who return in spring. 18. In some versions of the Frog Prince, it's not a kiss that transforms the frog into a prince, but chopping off his head. In the original Brothers Grimm version, the princess slams the frog into a wall to turn him back into a prince. Ouch! 17. Lewis Carroll's version of Alice in Wonderland is odd throughout, including Alice finding a caterpillar smoking a hookah on a mushroom, as well as her leaving the tea party ticked off at all the riddles and calling it the stupidest tea party she's ever attended. 16. Jean-Marie Le Prince de Beaumont's Beauty and the Beast features Belle's poor father first finding a mysterious castle and plucking a rose for his daughter. The beast emerges, angry that not only did the father consume all his food and drink, but that he also took the rose, his most prized possession. The beast allows him to give it to his daughter, but only if he returns and keeps it a secret. But Belle forces the story out of her father and goes to the castle herself. She stays there, and the beast continuously asks her to marry him. She keeps saying no until she finds him nearly dead from heartbreak. Her tears over his body finally turn him into a prince. 15. In the Brothers Grimm version of Cinderella, the stepsisters cut off parts of their feet to fit into the slipper, but the blood gives them away. In the end, their eyes are pecked out by birds. 14. Puss in Boots features a cat who wants to make his poor master rich. The cat continually catches rabbits in the forest and gives them to the king, courtesy of the fictitious Marquis of Cahaba. One day, he steals a boy's clothes while he's bathing in the river and tells the approaching king the boy is the Marquis. After threatening townsfolk to say the boy is the Marquis, lest the cat turn them into mincemeat, the king is convinced and the boy is given the king's daughter to marry. 13. In the 1812 Brothers Grimm version of Snow White, the queen is Snow White's own mother. She wants to eat her lungs and liver as proof of Snow's death. In the end, she has to dance in a pair of red-hot iron shoes until she dies. 12. The story of Hansel and Gretel may seem benign enough, but it may have referred to many parents who deserted their children during a major European famine in the 14th century. Or it might refer to a famous baker, whose rival was so jealous of the gingerbread cookies she made, he told the town she was a witch. They chased her down and burned her in her own oven. 11. Chu Renhuo's version of Mulan has the warrior come home from war to find her father dead, her mother remarried, and the Khan calling her to be his concubine. As it's all too much for her, Mulan kills herself. 10. In the Brothers Grimm version of Rapunzel, the prince visits Rapunzel so often that she gets pregnant, and her clothes grow tight, which is what gives her away to the witch. The witch banishes her to the wilderness, where she gives birth to twins. 9. The story of Little Jack Horner goes like this. King Henry VIII was confiscating Catholic lands in England after breaking away from Rome. A bishop, trying to keep his abbey, tries bribing the king with 12 estates in return for not taking it, hiding the deeds in a pie crust to keep them safe from thieves. The king has the bishop quartered and hung, but his servant Jack Horner escapes with the pie crust and the deeds. 8. The famous trickster Br'er Rabbit actually has his origins in Cherokee and African stories. Though the Akan people of West Africa usually tell of a trickster spider named Anansi, the stories aren't nearly identical. Some academics say the American version of Br'er Rabbit is an allusion to the African slaves who used their cunning against their masters. 7. In The Goose Girl, a maid tricks a princess into changing identities with her, so she can marry a prince. The maid kills the talking horse that's with them to keep evidence from getting out, and the princess-turned-maid gets a job taking care of geese. Thankfully, the maid eventually receives justice when she is thrown naked into a spike-filled barrel and rolled around town until she dies. 6. The original story of Chicken Little features the paranoid chick gathering up other animals on the way to tell the king the sky is falling. Most endings have a fox invite the animals to its home, where it eats them all. 5. Bluebeard tells the story of a wealthy, ugly, blue-bearded man who has been married many times. Trouble is, no one knows what happens to his wives. After convincing one of his neighbor's reluctant daughters to marry him, he leaves for a while, leaving all the chateau's keys in her possession, including one to a door she's forbidden to open. Curiosity gets the best of her, and she opens the room, finding the bodies of his ex-wives hanging from hooks on the wall and the floor pooled with blood. 4. The Brothers Grimm's Rumpelstiltskin tells the story of an imp who makes a deal with the miller's daughter. Her father lies and tells the king she can weave straw into gold, so he puts her to it, saying he'll kill her if she doesn't do it by morning. The girl meets an imp and they make a deal. He'll weave the straw into gold if she gives him her firstborn. When the child is born, she refuses to give it up. He agrees to relent if she can guess his real name. The girl snoops at his house and overhears him singing it. Next day, she tells him his true name, and in a fit of rage, he drives his right foot into the ground, then grabs his left foot and tears himself in two. 3. The Fox and the Hound isn't originally so much about friendship. In it, the fox purposefully leads one of the man's dogs onto railroad tracks, where it's hit by a train and dies. Furious, the master trains a dog which finally chases the fox till the fox collapses from exhaustion and dies. The dog is close to death too, but its master nurses it back to health before later shooting the dog because he can't have a dog in the nursing home. 2. The Pied Piper of Hameln is a story which tries to account for the strange disappearance of most of the town's children. The true story goes that the piper agrees with the mayor to get rid of the rat infestation. He does, luring the rats to a watery death in the river. However, the mayor refuses to pay the full amount, so the piper later returns and lures the children away. Some people believe that the children may have been led away to participate in a children's crusade. 1. Yes, off to grandmother's house Little Red Riding Hood went, but in some original versions, the wolf arrives at the house early and chops up the grandmother, putting her flesh in the pantry and blood in a wine bottle. He tells Red to have something to eat. She does, unaware that they are her grandmother's remnants.